Thousands of people turned out across France to protest against French President Emmanuel Macron's policies for the 13th straight week. Clashes broke out outside the National Assembly building in Paris, with one protester losing a hand amid reports of other casualties. The fresh protest comes after France's National Assembly passed a controversial law Tuesday aimed at cracking down on protesters in the wake of yellow vest demonstrations. Amid the lingering protests, a diplomatic row erupted between France and Italy, with Paris recalling its ambassador in protest to Italian leaders, quote, provocations. In tonight's debate, we'll take a closer look at what's happening on the streets in France. Here's a report to help you better understand the situation.
Gilets jaunes, or yellow vests, are neon vests that French drivers wear at the time of emergencies and crises. But for the past 13 weeks, the neon yellow vest has turned into a symbol of anti-government protests in France, where every Saturday is entangled with crisis and unrest. The protesters take to the streets to decry economic policies of President Emmanuel Macron, who they believe is disconnected from their day-to-day struggles and therefore needs to resign.
What you need is not only to fire Macron. Of course, we have to fire him. But I'm for the RIC, the Citizens' Initiative referendum, to be able to have a more immediate democracy so that we can control the elected representatives.
The rallies often turn violent. This week, they were uglier than ever. Several got hurt severely, like this man whose hand was gravely injured with a smoke grenade. Police forces also sustained injuries, since violence begets violence. The weekly protests continue despite Macron's ongoing national debate, which is an attempt to appease the protesters. People say a debate can't solve the deep-rooted problems.
It's not a referendum story, because what does the referendum mean, like the big debate? What does that mean? Everyone's talking, but what's the point? It's absolutely useless. It's the institutions that are bad at the moment. Justice is really borderline, and the way the institutions behave, we have to change the institutions.
The protest started in mid-November as an outcry against Macron's planned fuel price hikes, but they snowballed into total rejection of President Macron's policies and his leadership. The president kept offering concessions and talks, which the protesters kept to refuse. The grassroots movement also affected Macron's foreign policy, as he recalled the French ambassador from Italy. That's why Italian leaders have been expressing support for the Yellow Vest movement for months. So Paris decided to break the good relations they have had since the end of the Second World War. But the division is not just on an international level. Yellow Vest protesters are also divided on what their next step should be. Some are willing to join hands with trade unions to accept more government concessions. Others continue to mistrust them. But most want to continue ratcheting up the pressure, even demanding the resignation of the French president.
On tonight's debate, we have from Foreign Policy and Focus Ian Williams, who's joining us from New York, and also Executive Director of Workers Independent News, Mr. Frank Emsbach, joining us from Madison. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Williams in New York. How big of a threat are the Yellow Vest protests to Emmanuel Macron? Will they eventually prove to be a political thorn in Macron's side, if they aren't that already?
Well, they're already a wasp sting in his side. One of the names originally used, you might remember, was Yellow Jackets, which is the name of a particularly vicious wasp. So they've certainly been stinging in lots of ways. The big problem with the Yellow Vests is they're moving against Macron and they're moving against neoliberal policies. But the question is whether without leadership and structure, they can actually move forward. It's a chaotic, spontaneous movement with a lot of people. It clearly reflects a lot of people in France, like in the rest of the world, are very, very angry with the present situation and with the present representatives and the political classes. So in that case, there's lots to be angry about on a daily basis. Anybody who goes to the supermarket has grounds for being angry. anyone who sort of lost work or is being, their wages have been held down has daily grounds for anger. The question is, what do you do about it and which way will it go? And I think the danger of the yellow vests or the yellow jackets is that there's these double, there's a dualism in there, like with the Italian government. On the one hand, they're calling for some very progressive things. And on the other hand, there are signs that some of them are quite reactionary. You know, there have been reports of anti-Semitic and racist statements being made by gangs of yellow vests around France. So, you know, we often tend to forget with the distance that Hitler and the Nazis actually argued against capitalism. And not because they believed it, but they knew it was a rallying cause. They rallied the discontent of people. And that's one of the potential problems here. Obviously, Le Pen and the Front National are busily trying to recruit the Yellow Jackets to their cause, although it seems at the moment it's more likely to go the other way.
Frank Amps back from Madison. Just recently, in a hasty move, France passed the anti-yellow vest law. It was at the height of these mass demonstrations. With that, we saw the violence increasing on the streets. Do you think that was a bad idea?
I think whenever you move towards repression, it's a bad idea. And the reaction was perfectly clear. People knew, everybody knew, that once the French government said you can't protest and then attack people, then there was going to be violence. But the violence is always used by the people in charge and then blamed by the people who are trying to do something. But one thing I think is very important for people to realize here, there's been an evolution in the Yellow Vest movement. In November, they were very, very distrustful of the unions, and the unions were very distrustful of them. Now, last week on Tuesday, there was a demonstration in France, 150,000 people. And the head of the CGT got up and said, well, the difference between us and the yellow vests are that our vests are red and theirs are yellow. But on the key issues of taxation, of changing the society and so forth, we are in accord. And this is a major change, and I think portends a major shift in the way these demonstrations are going to operate in the future.
Mr. Williams, is this law against the freedom of protest? It did allow administrative rather than judicial authorities to issue protest bans. Violators face up to 6 months in prison and even a fine of 7,500 euros.
Well, it's fairly common to see how sort of neoliberals from Tony Blair to the French frequently resort to authoritarian measures. And as Frank said, it's quite dangerous, because it provokes a counter-reaction. And yes, there is violence on the part of some of the yellow vests, but the authorities should know that if they respond too vigorously, then they're creating the conditions to expand the movement, to expand the anger, to expand the protest. The danger is, yes, there's a wing of the yellow jackets which is turning to some extent leftwards, but there's another, I mean, there are two separate wings here. The wing that is meeting the Italians, their Italian counterparts, is quite left-wing and would pass for socialist in many ways. But when you get to the CGT, you know, 40 years ago, is it 40 years ago? God, it's 50 years ago. When the CGT came in on the side of the students, this was really meant something. Sadly, one of the things the protests are about is the lack of institutional representation. The CGT is a shadow of its former self. It can't command millions of workers at the flick of a commissar's finger the way it used to. So yes, it's significant about how some of the yellow jackets feel, but it comes back to the point that the yellow jackets are not a coherent movement. They have no discipline. They can't throw out racists. They can't throw out anti-Semites. They can't throw out Islamophobes from their ranks. They can't even throw out people who are gratuitously violent, because it's an incoherent movement of anger rather than a disciplined movement. And then the question possibly is, if it survives, which discipline movement will take it over? And that's something to worry about, because these things can go either way.
Mr. Emsbach, the numerous injuries over the past weeks have brought a lot of focus on the French police's violence, with one protester losing a hand in Paris earlier on Saturday. Is this level of violence, in your views, justifiable? And what is the reason for the French government's zero tolerance with these demonstrations?
The reason is that the entire ruling class of France, the political ruling class, the intellectual ruling class, the Socialist Party, what's left of it, the Greens, of course, the right-wing parties, and almost everybody else is in fear of this type of uprising where you have a disorganized, maybe even anarchistic group of people saying, we're just not interested in making deals anymore, we want change. That's very scary. And so I think that the administration reacts in a completely negative way. And the net result is that what happens when this happens is that you will have people in the street demanding their right to demonstrate, just as in 1968, which is what's really got the French leadership spooked. And it didn't matter when they arrested people. All that stuff was illegal in 1968 also. So, you know, when you say no and you will not talk to people and you will not engage seriously politically, and the administration has refused to do that, the French administration, then you're going to have a violent reaction. You're going to have people demanding their rights and the police clubbing people. And after a while, you know, you don't want to be the clubby anymore.
That's right, Mr. Williams, a war of words. Let's take our focus to Europe now. A war of words has been escalating between France and Italy, with France recalling its ambassador in protest to what it calls, quote-unquote, Rome's repeated interference and meddling. Well, why does France feel qualified to intervene in internal affairs of Venezuela, for instance, but Italy can't do the same when it comes to these French protests? It seems a bit of hypocritical in this point.
Well, there is more than a touch of hypocrisy.
Is that a question?
look at it from a diplomatic point of view. France and Italy are close allies. And it's generally accepted inside Europe, it's a matter of politeness rather than international law, that you do not go, you know, you don't get Macron going and supporting May or Corbyn directly. You know, foreign leaders do not interfere directly in elections, the Trump-Moscow connection notwithstanding. You know, as I say, it's more a case of politeness than international law. But the tension has also been there because France has been on the wrong side of Europe as far as the Italians are concerned, because, as you know, the Italians are challenging the European budget rules, which is one of the signs that the movement, the sort of yellow jacket equivalents in Italy, are effective in some ways and combine both left and right. So by France doing this, it shows they're very, very thin-skinned. I mean, Macron, he's almost a baby. He might have big military parades for Trump, but he's relatively inexperienced, and he is clearly... A statesman would have just shrugged this off and done a put-down, might have even sent a tweet. But to break off relations is a fairly extreme reaction, and unlikely to, with the present Italian government, to ameliorate the situation.
Mr. Emsbach, would you like to respond to that?
Yeah. Well, I think my colleague is correct. It's an overreaction, and it's foolish. Clearly, the Five Star Movement is going to try to find right-wing allies, basically, all over. And I imagine that's the game plan here. But there's European elections coming up for the parliament, the European Parliament, I think, in 2 or 3 weeks. And I believe this is part of the Italian strategy to raise the profile of the kind of people they want elected. But I think it's an overreaction. I think a much more fundamental thing is this. You've had a sort of unveiling of the class antagonisms in France. Le Monde Diplomatique just had an interesting article about that. explaining who was who. And this is not a question of extremism versus something else, but some pretty clear class demands going on here. And it is true that you can go either way, but if you're serious about raising class issues, wealth, control of manufacturing, transportation that serves the people, and so forth, you only wind up going towards the left. And I think that notion frightens the French ruling class, and the Italians for that matter. And you're also right that the evisceration of the trade union movement weakens the left and leaves these protests in a much more anarchical situation.
Mr. Williams, France's far-right leader Marine Le Pen appealed to the movement last month when her National Rally Party launched its campaign for the European Parliament elections. Do you think that the populists are trying to lure in the yellow vests?
Well, yes, obviously. Quite clear. There's an amazingly high support for the yellow vests in French public opinion polls. I think it was, 64-65%? And, you know, this means that a lot of people who would normally frown upon riots and demonstrations and burning cars and smashing shop fronts are so exasperated that they support this, at least sort of intellectually, even if they're not going and doing it themselves. That's a very dangerous situation for a government, that so many people support, you know, essentially an anarchic stream, because everybody, it's fairly clear what they're against. It is, as I said earlier, the big problem is, what are they for? And with a party, you know, the party will have a manifesto, it has leaders, the leaders can be removed if they don't reflect the party. But a movement is amorphous, and you know, it can go anywhere. You know, it can go around lynching African immigrants if necessary. It can burn down trade union offices just as easily as it can burn down the corporate headquarters. And you see this all over the world. It's almost an American-style situation where, you know, populism can be anti-union, big unions, big labor, they talk about. It's this protest against powerlessness, which can be manifested in so many frightening ways. And if there isn't some type of organization and leadership that's prepared to take it. You know, I don't want to go into Bolshevik leadership, but, at the very least, somebody who articulates their desires and can move them along in that way can produce results. But if it's just stray people popping up and claiming to represent them, and as we know, the Yellow Jackets have two very distinct strains. How long can they carry on with a... Right. How long can the left and the right in there cohabit and have a coherent movement before they start squabbling and falling apart themselves?
Mr. Ansbach, this
is no way to exercise pressure on a government if you're coming from two different directions.
Right. We're still focusing on Europe, Mr. Ansbach. The French Foreign Ministry said that this new provocation is unacceptable between neighboring countries and partners at the heart of the EU. Give us your perspective on the ramifications that this has for the EU as a whole. Many believe that this incident itself highlights deep divisions in the heart of the European Union.
I think that the French are overblowing this, but yes, there are certainly strains within the EU, particularly with Italy to a great extent, and Greece and other countries, who do not like the German-French monetary and manufacturing policies, which have essentially contributed to their indebtedness. And so you have a move to try to change those things, and that, I think, is the basis for the Italian government's move here. Clearly, if you move away from this German-French consensus, you're going to have a much more fragmented and weakened EU at a time when the EU has to try to figure out what to do with the United States, since the United States has now walked away from or is attacking policies that the European Union thinks are very important, like the treaty with Iran, for instance, or the nuclear treaty, which we just walked away from, and now the Russians have also. These are really fundamental problems for the European Union, and they cannot be dealt with if they're all fighting with each other about basically peripheral matters in a certain sense, or fundamental economic matters of policy. And so all of these things are in the air at once, right. And the French-Italian dispute at the moment, I think, underlines them.
So we're running short of time. We've got one question left. I'll give you a minute apiece, Mr. Williams. What is the end game for these demonstrations? A Macron resignation, a harsher crackdown from the French authorities, a full-fledged yellow vest political party? What do you think?
Well, look, one thing might be they'll get tired of it all and go home if the French government sticks it out. We really can't tell. I mean, how can you predict the movements of people? How can you predict the actions of people who have no leaders and no structure? The initiative is in the hands of the Yellow Jackets. If they have the stamina, they can carry on. And obviously, they want Macron to resign or fairly clearly or to capitulate to them. They're also asking, I mean, the referendum, I think we've seen in Britain that referenda are vastly overrated as a means of determining policy. That the referendum in Britain certainly didn't solve any issues. And, you know, it's a binary question. The point about governments is they have to react to real-world events, not just to arbitrary binary questions on a ballot paper.
Mr. Emsbach, your final thoughts on that as well?
I think the movement is either going to coalesce into something or peter out. But my sense is that it is such widespread, both rural and urban, that it's going to wind up coalescing probably to the left and may become a movement that revitalizes the left-wing parties in a different way than has been the case for the last 20 years. And I think that's a relatively optimistic view, and I hope it happens. I think it's equally possible that things will just collapse in a certain way and not move forward.
That's all the time we have for the show. I'd like to thank my guests from Foreign Policy and Focus, Mr. Ian Williams joining us from New York, and also Executive Director of Workers Independent News, Mr. Frank Emsbach joining us from Madison. And also special thanks to you, our viewers, for watching the show. But that's it for tonight. Bye, everybody.